presents Promethea, warrior princess of High Brazil, the scheme of the Scarlatine Sorcerer. Alan Moore? Okay. South Tower Hospital, New York, 1999. And then on his watches,
oh, the weeping gorilla.
Been my
okay, next page.
Next page is Bob.
Okay, I'll take that guy. Not too close, Roger. Try to swap the doll from a distance. He may be wired with explosives. Kenneth, what's your psychic probe telling us?
I don't know. I'm not really getting any signal. It's like there's nothing there.
Nothing there, Kenneth? What are you talking about? You can all see him.
Hey, this is Marv. Bob, it's one of his dollograms. It has to be. And if it's the painted dolls down, not down there, that means he's somewhere else. Oh, God. Roger, Stan, it's the doll. He's...
Oopa.
Doctor? Nurse?
Getting worse, apparently. Her body's rejecting the clone meat they grafted on. Say, what happened to that kid who was visiting Shelley? The one who fainted? Well, they stuck her in a side ward.
Sorry.
She still hasn't revived.
She has to go.
We called the college. Keep going.
They'll contact her family. Probably she's on some designer drug. Bored with husband and I'm hungry.
Yeah, probably. Is on. Only two more nights. Denali McBeal is on. Only two more.
Look how they get away and try. Look how they try to get away. Didn't she see the spiked heads? Little girl shouldn't go trespassing in Transipality.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Let her run. It's always funny, and it tires them out. So what do you have your eye on? Leg? Breast? Wing? Probably leg. I'm doing two of these...
I guess so, yeah.
Okay. Probably leg. She doesn't look like she's got very much on her.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I don't know. She looks young. Quality cuts. Nice if you hang them until they're a bit gamey. Waste of good meat. We always used to roast them whole with little cloves. Second, lovely. You're making me dribble. Let's do her now. No, no, let her run. They're better when they're worked up a sweat, saltier.
Oh, please.
My youngsters will want the hands. They're collecting them.
Please, wake up. Oh, God!
It's a craze with the little ones. There's this tiny tendons you pull on so that the fingers move. Looks real comical.
Don't worry, darling. Everything's going to be lovely. If you could just be a sweetie and step to one side. Ah, yes. That's absolutely super.
You're another Promethea.
No, dear. You are another Promethea. I am the Promethea. I'm Grace Branner, and I'm rather the classic model. Now, could you be an absolute treasure and grab one of these blood roosters for me instead of just goggling?
Grace Branner? You did all those Promethea pulp covers in the 1920s.
Darling, I lived all those Promethea pulp covers in the 1920s. You know how thoroughly sick one can become with torture chambers, demon altars, hunchbacks, and skeletons.
Yeah, I guess. Listen, my name's Sophie Bangs. I was just with Margaret, the Promethea before you, but then I lost her and ended up here with those lizard men chasing me.
They're called manigators, darling, not lizard men. And I'm perfectly aware of who you are. Dear Barbara can't shut up about you tackling that smee and those imps from the Howling. She's very easily impressed, poor thing. Anyway, you going to settle up or not?
On this thing?
Darling, if you're going to be Promethea, I'm sure you'll end up with much stranger things between your knees.
Yeah?
I guess I'm supposed to provide you the next stage of your tuition. What did Margaret teach you?
About war, mostly.
Boys calling for their mothers, all that stuff. Frightfully moving, isn't she? Margaret's big on compassion is symbolized by the cup. That's what she taught you, the way of the cup. Now I'm going to teach you the way of the sword.
What, like chopping people up and stuff?
Oh, dear, you're rather literal, aren't you? You see, darling, on this level, everything's symbolic. Everything stands for something else. Sword stands for reason and discrimination. Frankly, dear, they cut through bullshit.
And alligator guys. You cut through them, too. There's blood all over this saddle.
Reason slices through illusion and hallucination, darling. That's all the manigators are. Nasty little figments dreamed up by a nasty little mind.
But even though they're figments, they're still dangerous here.
Oh, good God, yes. You should put the toes up as soon as look at you. I've been fighting them off for years. After all, darling, High Brazil is supposed to be my territory.
So, High Brazil, that's like an area of the Immateria, right?
Roughly speaking, it overlaps with Fairyland and Trinanog and places like that. But basically, it's mine. Or at least it was until that usurper took it from me.
Usurper? But I don't remember your throne getting usurped in any of those old pulp stories.
No, this happened since then. In fact, the usurper is the being that wrote those old pulp stories, the being that created the Manigators. In the March 1927 issue of the movie, as I recall, his name is Martu Neptura.
Oh, God, he's so big. How can you fight anybody who's... Wait a minute. Martu Neptura? Wasn't that just a house pseudonym for any hack who wrote Promethea back in the 20s?
Exactly, darling. Neptura is a pseudonym of harmless fiction, except here, where he's non-fiction, and non-harmless, for that matter.
Promethea, think not that I do see, thou little one. Neptura sees all.
Stupid man, it's thee, not thou. Hopeless fat editor. Oh, well, let's go make a few significant cuts in his major passages.
For all my dark power shall scorch thee.
If he's imaginary, how come this guy is so powerful?
Because he's an imaginary writer, dear. Writer's shape is stuff of fiction. So here, you can do anything. Follow me through those gates up ahead.
Ugh, more heads. I saw some at the kingdom's borders earlier.
I said he was a writer puppet. I didn't say he was a good writer. He repeats them awfully. He's very few surprises, obviously. And frankly, you can see them coming a mile off. Stay behind me and keep your head down.
Hey.
Ah, you see, nothing but blasted navigators. You think I never thought anything else. Somebody remember Promethea and the Screaming Cloud? Or those leopard boys from Claws of the Cat Cub? Now, actually, they were rather dishy.
Where are we heading?
Neptura's Eerie of Evil. I mean, do you see what I'm saying about his writing? Dreadful name. Of course, the place used to be my bedchamber. That's where he occupied it. The poor creature's utterly besotted with me. Ah, now, now, darling, I'm in touch.
Besotted? You mean this wizard guy with you?
Well, I should have thought it was all rather obvious. All the jewelry right on my taut thighs and heaving bosom. I mean, I think I can remember my bosom ever having heaved as yours. Ah, there's the tower right up ahead.
I thought Neptura was that guy filling the sky.
That's just a projection. He'll be in the tower. Trap. He's some leech leaves.
Leech leaves? What are we... Ow, they bite!
Yes, and they suck blood, I'm afraid. They're from the tourist vampire topiary. Just slap them away. The important thing is to reach the wizard's eyrie and... That's odd.
What are you talking about?
Someone's watching us. I can feel it. It's not Neptura. It's not the other Prometheus.
I can't... Ow! I can't feel anything.
That's because you don't have a keen enough edge to your mind and senses yet. Someone's watching. Someone's far away. It's you! Who do you think you're spying on, you grubby little adolescent?
Kenneth? Who's Kenneth? We got our Kenneth here.
We lost.
My God.
Sorry, guys. Sorry, I'm muted. I'm back. My God, she can see me. But how on earth can she possibly...
Hey!
What?
That's my friend. What do you mean to my friend? You're not a doctor. Were you perving on her? Were you?
No. Look, I wandered into the wrong room. I'm sorry.
Oh, don't get up. Jeez, I just want to leave her alone. I can't imagine she's unconscious. I'm all full guy. Fill it up.
But I wasn't...
Oh, there's your friend now. Somebody be Roger.
Kenneth? Hey,
Hey, you wouldn't know. You're the guy that I spent in the room.
But...
Kenneth, you idiot, you're supposed to be watching Marv.
Hey, I know you. You're the new Roger from the Five Soul Guys. So is the old Roger ever coming back?
No, he isn't. Come on, Kenneth, we have to talk.
Well, look, I just made a mistake.
Sure. Like Marv got shot. Kenneth, the doll's been seen. He may intend on coming back to finish the job.
Nurse?
Come on. Let's go look at your friend, Liz.
Vandiver. Thanks for your Vandiver. I can't say if I called her and Sophie collapsed. Boy, she's totally out, huh?
Yes. Now answer me honestly. Has Sophie taken anything? Is there any reason she should be like this?
I really can't imagine. Well, at least whoever it was has stopped watching us. I'm going to kick this turret door and up there.
Ow, these leads are getting worse.
Hardly surprising, dear. The tourist planted a hell oak slap in the middle of my lovely terrace. Be careful to avoid the gap, but I cut it back and tend to surprise you and send you mad. There, that's my uprooted symphony wishes, you scabby new brute. Neptura.
Ah, Grace, what a picture you are with the flashing blade, thine rippling fuse. It makes such magnificent cover painting and for caption. Let me think. Ah, I know. Promethea and the Hand of Death.
Rippling fuse? Oh, you ridiculous creature. Get back, Sophie. You're certain glob goblins. All right, Neptura, I finally have about as much of your shaky grammar and leering description as I can bear. Say your spin words in a hand or a tongue.
Of the five writers generally thought to be behind the Neptura pseudonym, Gerald Summers had the most solid plot construction, while Ray Bennett's descriptive passages are often both distinctive and surprisingly good.
Okay, one.
Lamont Davies was the most prolific of the Neptura authors, narrowly beating Bernard Haupt, who was also notable for his misogynistic bondage scene.
What are you? What are you doing?
And astonishing editor Lewis Werner, who seemed obsessed with medieval weaponry.
Harrod.
Sophie? What on earth have you done to him?
Well, I was just... It was just stuff on my term paper. I figure everybody treats this Neptura guy like he's one person, but really he's like all these different guys.
Ha! What delightful logic. What swordplay?
Swordplay?
Well, yes. The sword is reason, and you just wield one of reason's sharpest tools, which is reductionism. That's a process of breaking down one big problem into lots of little problems.
Yeah.
You chopped him into pieces, darling. You know, I'm starting to understand what Barbara sees in you. You really are quite good.
Well, thanks. Am I as good as you?
Don't push your luck, dear. No one's as good as me. Now, come on. Everything's settled. You have a crash course to be getting on with.
Hey, everything looks different.
Well, yes, that's because I'm imagining it now. Rather than a conglomerate of fourth-rate hacks than I am an artist. We have a better eye than writers.
So, is that it? I have learned everything?
Of course not. There are four magical weapons. You've yet to master the wand or pentacle. Bill will help you. Just take the highway east to High Brazil and you'll find her. Good luck, darling. From what I've heard, you're most certainly going to need it.
This texture, very public official, Sonny Baskerville, today embarked on a much-publicized tour of the city's hospitals. Hopefully this should improve the media perception of New York's pleased and battled multiple-personality mayor. This is texture. Following last night's disastrous St. Mark's Place performance, Limp frontman on Telemar Sykes has checked into a rest home.
Yeah, I'm in marketing and sales.
Speaking under medication, he announced a new, more spiritual direction for the band, influenced by William Blake and that guy from Verve. Meanwhile, New York's South Tower Hospital is on alert following fears of an attack by celebrity omnipath, the Painted Doll. Critically wounded, Five Swell Guys member Marv is still a patient in the hospital. This is Texture.
This is, Benny. Okay. Listen, that boss is assistant. Who's the assistant?
I could be the assistant, Johanna.
Okay.
Listen, boss. If you're all settled in, my room's down the hall. Is this suite okay? We could get them to change it if it's too big.
No, no. You run along. The suite will be perfectly cozy once everybody's here.
Sure, okay. I'll be in room 411 if you need me.
I thought you'd never leave. Okay, boys.
And they materialize with all the sigils of all of the angels.
Let's finish this. Next, the rock and hard places.
I think those are the sigils of the Goetia. However that's pronounced. Do you know how the word is pronounced?
That's a Goetia. Yes, those are not necessarily the sigils. Right. Those are the...
There's a Goetia that he's...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Up.
Yeah. Because that's... But,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are they?
That's it.
Goetia. Anybody want to check what that is?
Mm-hmm. Are we going to look at the drawings? Should we analyze the drawings now?
Yep.
Just...
Which drawing are we talking about at the very beginning?
Well, since we're on the sigils, why don't we talk about them?
Okay.
No, we're looking at them.
What are you saying? I'm sorry, I'm not getting the word that you're calling them.
Sigil is S-I-G-E-L, is that right?
I-L.
I-L.
S-I-G-I-L.
Yeah, I-L. Okay.
And then you call upon whatever entity, whether it's high or low, via their mark or sigil. Now, the Goetia has its own set of sigils. You'll find different things. The Nakian, there's another type. John D. had like signatures of the angels and things like that. But, you know, whatever.
Find the same thing in voodoo, actually, with what's called the Bebe.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Bebe is a diagram that brings forward a Lua spirit.
And it's basically a way of concentrating your energy towards the purpose. Like, for instance, you would know why you're creating the sigil. It's not like, oh, well, let me just create a sigil. You know, you know that this will invoke a certain energy. Is it invoke or evoke? I always forget the two. How?
I think it's invoke, Joanna.
Okay.
Evoke is the call from below, and invoke is the call from above.
Is that true? Okay. Oh, really?
Well, that's the way it was defined by some magicians.
That is interesting.
I read years ago.
I don't think evoke is more vague. It's more like, you know, bring out the quality of, where invoke is really a specific reference to something.
Well, invoke, I think, applies really to the sigils and to magic. Evoke is more in the popular culture.
Yeah, it's poetic, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, say that like a certain poem evokes a certain kind of, you know, quality.
Right, an emotional
very evocative,
feeling.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sexual or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, for instance, a person who uses magic would definitely study the nature of the supernatural force that they want to invoke. And by creating the sign of that force, it is a mental discipline. Whether you believe there is a force or not, you will get a result. Even it's through your own psyche.
Well, John, that sort of implies, you know, something in kind of like, you know, material science rather than mental discipline. Because if you say, for instance, you can say that whether you believe in the law of gravity or not, you're still going to fall if you jump from something.
Right.
No? Mm-hmm. So if you say whether you believe in the Goetia or not, if you do that sigil, it'll appear. That sort of implies they have an objective reality that it's not, has nothing to do with you.
Mm, yeah, well, energy has a reality. Any energy. I mean, you could create your... even if you were creating an egregore, your version of what you think is the entity behind the sigil, you know?
There is an autonomy to the imagination. That was with a big surrealist thing. Of course, that what they meant is that they just meant that the imagination had its own rationale in a way. But the other way of understanding is that the imaginative realm carries with it its own objectivity in a way. As somebody used to say, why do monsters always look the same? You know, we've been able to make monsters monstrous, but they still exist within a very narrow frame of what we consider monstrous in terms of visual images.
And things do change culturally. Monster was originally a medical term for birth defects. Yeah.
I heard back to ancient Greek, which was a creature that was, not was a different species. Like, the Sphinx is a monster, because it got the body of a lion and the head of a human being.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's interesting that you bring it up, because it's so relevant to what the Promethea had to teach Sophie this time regarding swords. How the boogeyman is part of immateria, but how in immateria, the sword can vanquish the boogeyman, which she called manticores, I believe, or as Paul put it, blood-sucking roosters. And the concept of illusion and hallucination. I don't think that's really been emphasized enough in terms of, how we use the sword suit.
Mm. I mean that the positive things of rationality,
right?
Exactly, and to reframe, the kind and when this Promethea discussed reductionism, taking big issues and making them into smaller ones, vis-a-vis what was the guy who the template of the five or.
Many times when I look at the Ace of Swords, I think of cutting the Gordian knot, and the gift of analysis in the sense of, putting everything in its right place, things like that.
Can I say something about the Gordian knot story, Joanna?
Yeah.
Well, see, that's a very interesting story. If you know the context of it, it has a very different kind of lesson, really, in a certain way. So, Gordium was a place in Asia Minor, and there was this knot that was like this huge thing, And there was a tradition that said that no one could conquer Asia unless they could untie this knot, And then Alexander came, and he just sliced through it, and that was his way of untying it. Well, the knot is the tradition of thousands of years. And what Alexander did was, the beginnings of European imperialism. He basically said, hell with you and all your traditions and everything that's meaningful to you. I just smash you to bits.
He cut to the chase.
I was thinking about that. I was thinking, we were taught in like school the Gordian knot. And very admiringly, what is it that story tells us we're supposed to do with our problems? Smash through them?
Or do we, as it were, sit around and pick at the edges of them until they loosen up?
but what is it Alexander did that we're supposed to do? If we think of the Gordian knot story as an allegory for how we deal with life, what is it that we should be doing that's symbolized by Alexander cutting through the knot with the sword? That's the question I have.
He didn't treat it as a knot. He treated it as not just simply another obstacle to be cut through.
Okay.
Reduced.
He had no respect for its power.
So if you have a complicated problem in your life, say like a work problem, you just smash through it.
Well, no, what you bring it down, you make the first cut.
He cut through it and walked through. He saw it as an illusion.
He didn't buy into
its premise.
We're trying to play.
Actually, what he did is he was a student of Aristotle. Aristotle's the one who established for the West a certain kind of logic, particularly his logic of identity, which is A equals A, which everybody thinks is the beginning of logic. And however, the Eastern tradition, and also the Tarot tradition, has a sense of logic, which is this Gordian knot of interpenetrating meanings, in which A is a series of A, B, C, D, E, F, G. In other words, there's no independent identity the way that there's no modular identity the way Aristotle insisted in his logic. Rather, there is this. There are degrees of interpenetrating influences. So, in other words, it's sort of like seeing the ocean as the ocean and insisting that every ocean is merely an isolated drop. And the imaginative realm pretty much, I think, is an assault upon this view, materialist view of the law of identity, that eggs are eggs, this form of intransient literalism, that symbols don't exist and that meaning is limited to one-on-one things. That's one way of looking at it. I wanted to go to the pictures now. Rachel,
before you do, Paul, I want to ask you a question. On the last page here, who is the boss? I can't remember who the boss was.
Benny Solomon.
Yeah.
Benny Solomon. So he's evoked these 72 demons.
Yeah.
Because
issue
they want.
Issue 2, I think it was. She defeated his. He sent the SME in issue 1, I guess it is. Mm-hmm. And then he sent the two guys, the two gangster demons, in issue 2. And Promethea, beat him both times, and now he's kind of pissed off and. He's going for the whole attack.
And I do have a question here, which is that Barbara introduced Sophie to the cups, to water.
Mm-hmm.
And one way you could say to the psychic, and also you could say to the imaginative. And so what we've been introduced to so far is this way that our exterior world and the immaterial world can interblend and can reach back and forth into each other. Very much the way water can make dry stuff wet, but not necessarily, cause it to fall apart right away.
Paul, I was thinking about this in terms of the core cards and geomancy, and when we listened to some of us listened. What was the program on? On geomancy, the guy that spoke on geomancy.
Oh,
it was a teleconference as well. Eric Davis. Okay. At any rate, the concept of and of. I think when you're talking about interpenetration, that's totally the core card thing. For instance, the Queen of Wands, fire of water. And then you have, fire of water. And then there would be another core card to match it. It's not it's a title. And in Europe, they would say, I think, death, D-E or D-I. Do you understand where I'm going with this? as opposed to geomancy, which is and, fire and water.
Oh, okay.
All right, yeah, so it's a very subtle, it's a very subtle difference, a very subtle change.
Right.
But nobody talks about it. And that little word of, I keep thinking of President Clinton, it depends on what is.
What is, yes.
Right. It's the same sort of thing. Of is like this very strange little grammatical twist that changes everything. And it's exactly what you were talking about, Paul. It's the interpenetration of two elements and also two suits.
That's an interesting interesting point, Cynthia. I'm glad you brought it up.
It's like of almost implies that there's a hierarchy there, where and implies an equality.
That's very true.
So shall we go to the beginning of the with the pictures with the cover? I noticed that this cover says, in the bottom here, it says After Brundridge, which I guess is a famous illustrator.
Yeah. And you know that the feeling of that cover really is very different from the rest of the artwork in the issue. It's softer.
Well, actually, apparently many of the covers are meant to be homages to classic fantasy.
Sometimes too. Yeah.
It's interesting that it's done in colored pencil. It seems.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
I think we'll find if you look at some point at your there's Margaret Brundridge is based on Weird Tales cover artist Margaret Brundridge, 1900-1976. And then he has some copies of her covers, or at least he has a link to copies of her covers. I don't know if it's a full active link or not.
You're talking about in the PDF file, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, so there's, so in some ways, I think Margaret Brundridge is also the model for Grace Bragano, right?
Presumably, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the models, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the way we see the psychic. What's his name again? The psychic guy?
Is that Roger?
Yeah. Roger. Yeah, yeah, Roger the psychic. I love the fuzziness. You know, you see the pixelation there?
Uh-huh.
I love that because many times that's what you get is a pixelated image.
It is amazing that sometimes when you get these psychic images that come to you of various entities or whatever, they do seem awfully cartoonish, at least in my mind.
The pixelated images are basically, I don't know if comic book printing is still like that, but probably it's not, because now it's computer done. But in the old days of four-color comics and pulp printing, if you did enlarge it enough, that's what you would see.
Exactly, right.
So Kenneth is kind of penetrating into, in a sense, the comic book world.
Mm-hmm.
He's penetrating into the reality in which, you know, the people's minds are comic books.
Okay.
A work of imagination. So it's like self-referential kind of. Mm.
Yeah.
It's like going beyond the limits of his own universe into the universe of, the comic book. Universe in which what he has is a comic book, not life, you know.
And then we have the universal symbol of the evil clown. I love that.
Yeah.
I really do, because...
It's based on the Joker, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But so much better.
For one thing, he doesn't have green hair. Yes.
Well, a number of things. Apparently, the clown...
Hey, what's wrong with green hair?
I didn't say there was anything wrong with green hair.
Sorry, Gary. Jay.
Does anyone know the oriental symbol that's in the background of the first panel of the clown?
Oh, I see, right in the center under the flame.
Yeah, that sort of gets me. That means something.
Is.
We should try to find out what that is.
Actually, it looks like there's another one underneath it, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's on a vertical sign.
That might be easy enough to look up if one has the if one has an access to Asian Symbol Dictionary.
No, I thought it was Islamic at first.
No, that's not. That's definitely Asian. I don't know if it's Chinese, Japanese, or Korean. That's the problem.
Excuse me, what are we looking at?
Right in line with the elbow of the falling clown, his, let me see, that would be his left elbow.
It looks like it's four squares with like on a duopod. Upside down TV with antenna.
I'm only picking this.
It's
yeah.
The Chinese symbol.
Yeah. Only because we have symbols or calligraphy, you know, in the future panels. I'm wondering if that's
probably
something. It may just be.
Probably some kind of sexual image.
I'm browsing right here, right now. I'll keep looking while we're talking. And
okay.
I know I've seen it before. It's familiar. It's a.
Now, what do you know that there is actually a guy that has a business? This is a legitimate business of being the evil clown, and he will torment anybody for a week.
Oh my God! How weird.
Yes.
Must be in New York, no doubt. Huh?
No. This I don't know exactly where he is, but there has been some press on him. So do your evil.
No, I don't know. I'm just kidding.
If you do a search for evil clown impersonator, and he actually has packages in which he'll either torment via cell phone, come to the person's door, and things like that. I mean, weird. It's just
things like that.
Yeah. Could you imagine that? I mean.
No, I can't.
Yeah. That says something about our society.
When one of my sons was born, one of the gifts that was given to him was this magnificent satin clown.
Mm-hmm.
And it really wasn't a toy. It was more an artifact that you would put on the shelf,
mm-hmm.
which I did. And every time I passed it, it gave me the creeps. So I tried to change the mouth to make it a friendlier clown,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't work, and ultimately I just had to throw it away. I just couldn't keep it in the house.
Yeah.
It just totally, chilled me. It was just so creepy.
I don't do clowns. we'll just leave it like that. I don't do clowns.
But you do notice that Stan there, that is Stan, with the monkey wrench.
Yeah, the metaphysical monkey wrench.
And then also there's this big purple heart as the clown kicks Kenneth in the jaw. It's a pretty violent, no doubt violent violent thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And hoopla reminds me of an Al Pacino, like ooh-ha, you know.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of this is more deeply gone into in one of the other comics
mm-hmm.
coming out at about the same time. But then Kenneth is passing is out of the hall, and he passes by, and he's overwhelmed by the psychic imaginative images emanating from Sophie. So we've moved into the
mm-hmm.
hospital.
Right.
That was one of the fringe episodes where Walter was in the coma ward.
Mm-hmm.
And he too was picking up on the images and what he believed to be the psychic life
mm-hmm.
of the people in the comas. And where they traveled, they astrally traveled. I forget which mm-hmm. Which fringe it was, but I do remember.
Yeah.
This reminds me of it.
Mm-hmm. And if we proceed on to High Brazil.
And when you said fringe, I didn't think of the TV show. I was looking on the fringe of the
Of the picture.
Oh, I'm apologize. No, it's the TV show.
That's all right. Just a little literal-minded.
Since we're just
Aristotle's got a hold of me yet.
Another diversion. I started the new we call it Doctor Who. It's rather good.
Oh, yeah, it's fabulous, yeah.
Oh, I
love the Doctor.
Oh, yep. Amazing, amazing. I think the technology has now caught up with the imagination.
Oh, that's nice. So, special effects have always been slighted on Doctor Who over the years. So they finally picked it up a little.
Mm-hmm, yes. And the storylines are very good, too.
So, anybody want to look at the Revenge of the chickens here? With the
I'm seeing that the bug turns into a bullet. The fly or whatever it is. And no, that's a grasshopper. It's a grasshopper with wings.
Oh, yes, yes.
Or rather a locust. It should be a locust, right? It's a locust.
Well, you know.
That's the bottom of the page where the two were in the Promethea warrior priest. Priestess panel now where we're in the interior.
I love it. I see the
chickens as the monsters.
Yeah, right. The irony of that. Right, right. Because we eat chickens the way.
No, even the idiomatic expression, you're a chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we're doing swords.
Right.
It's. I mean, that is pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's an amazing.
And then he has this, it looks like Inuit totems things going on here.
Yeah, the spiral.
Oh, in the background, you mean?
Yeah, the spirals and oh, I wonder what that's from. Why they're making reference to this culture.
I don't.
Well, they look like labyrinths almost.
Almost, yes.
And,
except
they're
dual paths going
right,
in. So, yeah.
Right, right, right. And Rachel did mention the Gordian knot. So I don't know why that came to mind in reference to those, you know, side images to the title, but that's what came to mind.
Mm.
To go through a maze or a labyrinth is very similar exercise.
I think we should look up Inuit, though, totems and things like that. There may
be enough trouble with the Chinese characters.
I know. I'm kidding.
It's very Greek. It's not just Inuit.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, barely.
The PDF says that they're Aztec figures.
These are Aztec? Okay.
Okay.
Did
anyone... 65. Well, I can see where the next page...
Yeah, shall we flip over to the next
page? Before we do, did anybody notice the grasshopper turning into the rocket ship?
Yes, I did.
Bottom? Yeah, I thought that was pretty fun. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No.
No, are these the Aztec? No, this I see clearly as Aztec.
Yeah.
But the other one I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But this yeah.
And then the next one is... I don't know so much Aztec. Is it something else? What would somebody say if we flipped the page? The mosaic.
It looks Egyptian.
Yeah.
The center page.
Yeah.
The center of the
like
pages.
Or it could be Mayan. Mayan.
Mayan or a
Mayan. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it looks like what's on a totem pole.
Now, that would be Inuit, for sure, but I don't
know. Well, you see, when I think of mine, I'm thinking also of human sacrifice. You know, Aztec, Mayan. That was part of the culture. In fact, PBS had a great special that we all should see on. They decoded the language. of the Mayans. They finally got to
it. That's helpful.
Yeah. Actually, I was done well over 20 years ago.
Yep.
A lot of work on it since then. But they've been working on it steadily since they broke the code.
Now, you called this a mosaic, which indeed it is, but my first impression of it was of the phrase going through a brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
And last night, for 2 hours, not that I saw the whole thing, but it was on for 2 hours, and I think it was the second part, they had ancient alien art, Paleolithic images of UFOs and aliens that resemble, of course, our astronauts of today. But what they did was go from Africa to South America to North America to Europe. They traveled around the world showing these images. And I think it's interesting how we're mentioning different cultures with these images, because the truth of the matter is they are somewhat repeated. And this one, even at a distance, looks like almost, how would you say, when you fly up way up high, you can see the image on the ground, but when you're on the ground,
like
you can't
circle.
See it. Yeah, that kind of thing, or what looks to be like a gigantic message to the sky people, as they are called, culture to culture. They were saying even Akhenaten and Tutankhamun were, by some scholars, they had some PhDs, God knows where from, saying that it's possible because of their elongated skulls and almond kind of eyes that they were extraterrestrial and therefore worshipped. But nobody knows for sure, of course.
Oh, somebody knows, but he's not telling.
Okay, I found something that looks like that it's a Japanese symbol.
Japanese? Well, that's why I couldn't find it. I'm looking under Chinese.
Yeah, it sort of looks like it, not quite. And it may have to be part of called meditation, part of the word for meditation.
Huh.
Or inward.
Interesting.
Zen Chan meditation. It's there's other words. Yeah. I'm not too sure. You know, since it may also be, well, I don't know, because this one has a cross underneath, not the two legs.
Yeah, I found a couple that looked similar even in the Chinese, but without the two legs at the bottom.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that'll be interesting. It's a little bit of an interesting quest when you have nothing else to do in your life.
that would be second Tuesday of next week. Yes.
Shall we flip over to the where Martira Neptura makes its appearance?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the PDF does say that the planets and constellations in the night sky behind Neptura are a slight foretaste of a later issue.
It also says that, I think one of the things is God is part of our imagination. I think there's a little, you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
It's all, you know, God is who we create him to be or her to be.
So, David, you are not just part of our imagination.
What a riot. You know, it's interesting, too. The colors are more reflective of fire than they are of air in this particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there is that conflict between swords is fire and swords is air.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody notice the two statues? That
yes.
Look like statues?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
They look like Prometheus, in a way.
They kind of do.
They could be, in a way.
They're feminine, or Athena, or things like, something like that.
Sure.
And everything has almost like an Arabic tone to it.
Yes. It does say, even in the PDF, that it's an Arabian-style city. So I'm interested in the two purple figures, one on either side of that top panel.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
That's what the, they look like statues of Promethea. Prometheus-like person.
No, I'm talking about the ones in the borders.
Oh, the borders. Yeah, the like the fire-breathing serpents
like
or whatever.
So they have a crown.
They do.
And
yes.
They have a crown and either a mushroom or an arrow.
And I love the red lightning emanating from Neptura's fingers.
The
lightning ball.
And the boogie, the boogeyman between the chickens and that monster, they're adorable.
What I think is funny is how Promethea graces chopping away at all these people and going on and on and on in great, incredible detail about about all these characters.
Doesn't lose a breath at all, right?
That can be interpreted as a very sword-like character also. She continues on her academic way.
Forever analyzing, even as physical as she can get, she's still in the head.
Pedagogical here. There we are. I've had some professors like that. Blah, 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 blah. You know, it's like, what the heck are you talking about?
But they never were fighting off monsters at the same time.
So we flip the page
it's going towards the tower. Definite tower image.
Right.
And then, interestingly enough, the tower image is there. The hospital is a tower.
Right.
So when we have the interlude with Kenneth being freaked out by his visions of the Immateria.
That's a very interesting comment on the tower.
And you notice the fire coming out of Stacy's eyes. Get out of here. Every time I leave her alone, she's got fire coming out of her glasses. Or are those just...
Oh, yeah, she does.
Feathers.
It's cool.
Well, it's like her third eye, her chakras being opened.
Yeah.
Excuse me a second. This is Rachel. I'm going to have to go off because the dog needs to go out. So I will see you all next week.
All right. Alrighty. Thanks, Rachel.
Have fun.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Start book 2 next week, chapter 7.
Rachel has left the conference.
Yeah.
So,
I love that I keep forgetting who this guy is with the glasses.
Kenneth. Yeah,
and where he says, I wandered into the wrong room. I think that there's more to that than just telling Stacy that he wandered into the wrong room. He's like, oh, God, I didn't really want to see all that, you know?
Referencing it's Helen Sayou all the time. Helen Sayou, the French literary deconstructionist.
He's
a very interesting read if you ever want to spend some time with a little literary deconstruction.
Are you talking about Helene Cicero, the book of Promethea?
Yes.
Yeah, that's her vision of the perfect woman, and she is a lesbian writer.
I see. Well, you don't necessarily catch, at least as I didn't, in her literary essays, any constant reference to
the daughters of
lesbians. No. And you do in others, but not this particular writer.
Yeah, that's true. She is an interesting writer, but reading the French deconstructionists, they're very self-congratulatory.
Yes, they are.
They only talk about each other, and they talk about each other in the most obfuscating terms.
Sounds a little incestuous to me.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly what it is.
But so are we. So is American academia.
Yes, we are. So.
It's the language divide.
So,
anybody want to say anything about this altercation here, particularly between Roger and Kenneth? Kenneth, you idiot, you're supposed to be watching Marv.
Come on, Kenneth, we have to talk.
Well, it seems like Roger has issues with Kenneth being sidetracked by his psychic visions.
Yeah, and Kenneth keeps getting sidetracked into Promethea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in the very beginning, something happens and he's getting Promethea and not getting what he's supposed to be getting.
Right.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, it's distracting his psychic ability, so he's unable to focus on the dangers at hand for the five soul guys, like the clown running amok. I think actually Marv dies and the clown replaces him in the long arc of the story. I'm not really sure about that, but I think that
Well, now you gave it away, geez.
Yeah, but no, I might have made a mistake, too.
Marv got shot. She says Marv got shot.
Yeah.
And the doll's been seen.
And, yeah, and the doll replaces him, actually, as well as the member of the five. So, shall we go back into the Immateria and finish looking at
the pictures.
So we could do our question the oracles?
I love the way the next pages are paneled. I just think they're really wonderful. It's almost like looking into windows.
Right. Now, is this supposed to be... she takes the sword to this tree. Hell oak.
A hell oak, yeah.
A hell oak. But is it the tree of life?
Ooh.
Or tree of death, maybe? Maybe a tree of death.
It would attack the tree of life, but...
Mm-hmm. It does say the staple send you mad.
Yeah. The fact that it's called the hell oak...
It may be the reverse of the tree?
Yeah.
I don't remember any reference back when we really get into the tree. But, you know, let's be aware of that. Let's try and remember about the hell oak.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Be careful to avoid the sap. When I cut it back, it tends to blind you and send you mad.
That's what I'm saying.
The next thing that takes place, though, is Stacy's welding her own sword, which is the sword of reductionism, which takes place in the next page, where you have Natura, or whatever his name is, Marco Natura, breaking into his pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And
the name is Marco Natura, Neptune being one of the planets of illusion.
Yeah.
And the mark of illusion, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering about the play on words. You know.
Yeah, could be.
And we've had a lot of flying fish.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the second time the flying fish show up.
Yep.
And then you have her kicking the skull. You have Grace Promethea kicking the skull of Neptune over the wall. Actually, and then throwing another one out the window.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he becomes.
And then they're going down the wall, throwing
three others over the wall. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the fish are in the sky, like with this. And from what I've heard, almost certainly going to need it. The fish are floating around in the air,
mm-hmm.
and one of them is nested on top of power.
Mm-hmm. And here's
a whale rig.
Yeah, that is interesting. That it's on an oil rig.
Not only an oil rig, but power lines also.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Power lines are going by.
Kind of a comment on our technologies.
And then we get
in. An interesting thing, if you flip the page, mm-hmm. you come to the magical technologies, this sigil.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then we're at Kennedy Airport.
Well, if you if you look at the sigil, excuse me, I'm sorry, you have a double crescent moon. You have only one, I only see one legible Hebrew symbol. Only one.
Where? I don't even see that.
Up, the left-hand corner, upper left-hand.
Oh, yes, okay.
Only one. That looks like a high, which is life. And it has the eye of God, the eye.
Yeah.
Of God.
Well, we can't be sure about that.
You can't be sure, no. No, but it's the closest I could, I mean, I compared to the rest of it.
Inside the triangle is the moon god. And this is a three-pointed triangle.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of like an incomplete pentacle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's 3 points of the pentacle.
Or you might say that the lunar crest completed it for five, but that's stretching it. And then it would be,
And I think it's interesting. That's what he's looking at in his watch. You see how he's looking at his watch?
Right. Yes.
It's possible that is his looking into his watch.
What were you saying,
the same
Harry?
Way as he's looking at the lesser clavicle of the Solomon the King.
Right. Benjamin Meyer Solomon. There's a little thing up there saying. And
Which is.
And the hat is tipped to Blake.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, like, we were talking about the fish on the previous page. If you look at that airplane, it almost looks more like a whale.
It does.
Yeah.
A whale with wings.
Definitely the front of it does. Definitely looks like a whale. And then, last page again, we have a number of sigils floating around in the air, as well as the ones in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a little photograph of old Sophie Bangs rotting around in her purse.
And an ancient symbol of Capricorn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Rock and hard places.
Yes, good old Capricorn.
And what's that? Above the chandelier, there's something.
I think it's a shadow.
Just a shadow?
It's a sigil.
But it's
almost a sigil.
Yeah, it's interesting. It does look like the shadow of the chandelier, but where is the light source that is casting the shadow?
Yeah, there's no, only on the bottom where the entities are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, needless to say, he's, gathering up some other ones. So there's a couple of bonuses. One is the Promethea Gallery, which is note here, braided, pulled back, and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
The different ways that Promethea portrays herself, or is portrayed in her various incarnations.
Okay, are we going to cut the cards, kiddos?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm ready.
Go for it.
What's the question? Again, give us...
What's the lesson of the swords in this chapter? How's that?
Just the sword? We want to narrow it down.
Rachel was saying, how are we supposed to use what... I guess what Grace is doing with her sword...
Okay.
Specifically talking about cutting the knot.
Oh, the Gordian knot, yeah.
Our sort of reason to chop through things without just disregarding their complexity.
Okay, but we have to phrase that as a question, please.
How should we wield our swords? What should be our purpose behind wielding the sword? Yeah.
So it's how we should wield our swords, our own personal swords?
Of reason and influence.
Okay, I am cutting the cards now. I've shuffled, and I'm turning over. Oh, God, I love it. I love it. I love it. I cannot tell you. It is too much.
Three swords to burn.
I have justice adjustment.
Oh, cool.
Isn't that something? I get the chills when I do this. But okay. Here we go. The first card in the position of fire is adjustment. The second card in the position of water is fortune. The third card in the position of air is pleasure. And the fourth card in the position of earth is art.
And that's temperance. What is pleasure?
Pleasure is air.
No, but I mean, what card?
Oh, six of cups.
Thank you. I don't have my, I'm not looking at the cards.
Okay, sorry about that.
And earth is temperance?
Yes.
Temperance or art?
Right.
I missed water. Fortune. I'm assuming that's the wheel.
The wheel.
The wheel, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we have three majors and one lovely minor, the six of cups for pleasure.
That's interesting. Now, the basis or hidden motivation is the Ten of Wands oppression.
So, we're to use adjustment, change of fortune, and pleasure and temperance to overcome oppression.
No,
unfortunately, I didn't hear any of those cards.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
This is number one again.
Adjustment. In the Toth deck, which is justice. The second one in water is the Wheel of Fortune, or fortune, in the Toth deck. The third in air is pleasure, or the six of cups.
The third one is what?
The third one is pleasure, or the six of cups.
Okay.
The fourth one is temperance, or in the Toth deck, art. I love this layout. Wow. And the fifth card on the bottom is oppression, or the Ten of Wands.
In what position did you call that?
That's hidden motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Hidden motivation.
Then.
So I see it had to overcome oppression.
Yeah.
Well, what was the name of the Ten of Wands again?
Oppression.
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 Now, the outcome is defeat. The Five of Swords.
Oh, wow.
And she cackles. Okay.
I want to go back to bed now. Thank you.
Well, remember, for those who were at the conference, we turned straw to gold.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
with the so-called bad card.
Okay, now
that's another purpose of the sword.
Okay. Yep. Arc of Influence.
Uh-huh.
Card 7 to the left. Is,
wait, what about 6 first? Oh, yeah,
six is
first,
defeat.
Seven. Right, okay.
Yeah. 7 is the Magus, or Magician.
Whoa. Which one is it, Johanna?
The Magus in Toth.
But which Magus? Which?
Oh, I only have one Magus. I have the Magus.
Is that the Hermes one?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Then, then we go to the Ark's Pinnacle, and that is lust, or art, or wait.
No, that's not art.
No, that what is lust?
Strength.
That's strength. Okay, yes, you're right. Strength.
Another major,
and then at the end of the arc is the Ace of Discs.
Wow.
With what position?
That would be 9. 7,
I know,
8,
but
9.
What do you call it?
No, that's the Arc of Influence.
It's the arc
for the card, the outcome, which is defeat.
Okay. Do the 8, I can't remember. The aces don't have keywords on them, do they?
No.
Okay. So, we have
So this is the Arc of Influence for temperance?
No, the Arc of Influence for defeat.
For defeat.
Number 6.
What's the number 8 position? What is that called?
There's no name to the number 8 position. It's part of the Arc of Influence.
And the Arc of Influence
explains the outcome, why you have that outcome.
was for defeat.
Yeah.
Vegas bluff and the ace of discs. So the reason we're having defeat is I sort of some kind of materialism in a way. I mean,
we're burdened somehow.
There's a burden.
We've got five majors in this reading.
Yeah, and the arcs of influence were fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Ace of Pentacles to overcome defeat of number six, and strength to overcome, strength was to overcome the Ten of Wands, oppression.
No, seven, eight, and nine all affect position six.
All affect, yeah. Why that outcome is dictated.
Okay.
Because many times in a reading, you don't know why the outcome is off the charts. So that's what—that's one of the reasons I have an arc of influence here. Because certain things in our lives dictate why we get a certain outcome. Something that may be wrong with our way of looking at things.
What was position seven? What car? I missed it.
That is the Magus, the magician.
Magus. And then and number three is six of discs?
No, cups.
Six of cups, okay.
So this is a fascinating reading. We've gotten some really interesting readings. This one, to recap, how should we wield our sword? So, with justice?
Well, one we don't, we only get one sword. We get the five of swords.
Right.
Yeah. Well, justice has, I don't know about it.
Yes, yeah, it's justice. I mean, technically, justice has a sword, right. Now, okay, so the question, I have to write this down because I hope everyone is enjoying my efforts in putting everything in.
we are enjoying them.
And this is what I would call a wisdom reading, really, or a hermeneutic reading, totally.
And let me get the question down properly.
I wrote, how should we wield our sword of reason and intellect? But I don't know if we want to narrow it down to that. Or just leave it at
how should we wield our sword?
Yeah.
You know, and for me, I always put a slash after the S, so it's S words. Because that's kind of what I always put.
With the communication in there.
Right.
Communication aspect.
Okay. So what are you getting from this, peoples?
Well, I think the arc of influence is the most revealing to me. The fact that with the map being a magus in our own good. In other words, the five of swords or defeat is an illusion that the magus can overcome with strength and with the grounding of the ace of pentacles.
If I was to analyze it in my way of analyzing remember a sword has to go through fire.
Yes,
to be tempered.
I,
and you have the two acts here. You have actually the card art is temperance as we know it.
Uh-huh, yes. Uh-huh.
And you have the first card in the position of fire.
Yes.
Which is adjustment.
Yeah.
Or justice.
Uh-huh.
Amazing. I mean, that's why it blew my mind right away. I'm saying there is a fire element to, there is a creative element to the aspect of swords that possibly people do not acknowledge. But writers would acknowledge, but not everybody.
Well, and frankly, in
the two cards that are kind of the hidden is oppression, and the outcome is defeat. And going back to also the Reader Studio and what we've already talked about, it's like we typically go to the negative aspects of our intellect. We allow the negative to you know, kind of surface to the top, but all the cards that are the arc, the supporting cards, the first four, are really positive cards telling us that, you know, we have to sift for the positive in those, our first innate initial reaction to utilizing intellect, especially with, you know, tarot reading. Don't use intellect. You can't use logic either.
Well,
and maybe that's a wrong way to go at it.
Well, I think when the, you know, science has reduced the emotion or sensation of fear as being the common response to almost every human interaction or precursor to human interaction with environment and other beings. From the amygdala, part of the brain.
Amygdala.
And that's the fright and flight
mm-hmm.
response.
Uh-huh.
And it was used, you know, early on in evolution, if one buys this theory, for our self-preservation.
There is also something else, Cynthia, that's very interesting in the visual, because we are using the deck that is dictated by Prometheus, which is the toss deck, is that the defeat is in the sign of an inverted pentagram.
Yeah.
And that shows something, that there is an addictive, I think an addictive quality we're dealing with. With the mind and swords, there is.
That's a very good point. That is scientifically proven.
Yeah,
and
mm-hmm.
that's something that you and I are going to be discussing.
Yeah,
that's absolutely the truth. There is an addictive quality to the mind.
You know, I think.
However, they have found that the mind continues to be plastic, birth to grave. So you can reprogram.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of work.
It's
not lying about that, or going to joke about it. But you know, as tarot readers, we have to be aware. We have to give people these tools to be able to reprogram. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think
the quality of the
that
mind.
Is something that is absolutely shown not only in this reading but also in what we read today. Is think how quickly Sophie reacted and started pulling out her intellectual tools. You know, I mean, she was very nimble with them. She used them in a very different way than just a static, you know, process of information. She used them to vanquish, you know, the bad guy. So,
there were two vanquishings.
Yes.
Sophie did it intellectually.
Yes.
And was it the Grace Promethea?
Yes.
The Grace Promethea wielded her sword and just slashed through
right.
it.
And in a way,
Alexander, right.
both wielded the sword, but they didn't.
Right.
One wielded it actually and one wielded it metaphorically, you know,
right.
With her intellect.
Right.
But I think that it was the nimbleness of her intellect, of Sophie's intellect, that really was the key to the victory. Sasha, or however you say her name, vanquishes Kenneth from the room, as well as Promethea vanquishing him from watching.
Yep. Mm. Yes, and what was that? There was another point. That was a brilliant juxtapositioning. I thought that this chapter was really amazing. The whole reference to the mind as being a bunch of boogeymen, you know, I think was very, very important.
I had a dream in connection with that.
Go for it, Ted.
I had a dream that demons were chasing me, and I was kind of like, I decided that there should be a way to define them, to be able to sneak them out. So in my dream, I decided that they try to turn into something that appeals to you or that is familiar to you. So, like, one demon turned into my friend, and she's talking to me, and she has black hair, and I go,
didn't you have red hair? Even though she didn't, I was tricking the demon into thinking that it had done something wrong. And so she ran her hand through her hair and it turned red. And I was like, ah, I got you, you're one of the demons. And I sort of
kicked
myself the upper hand in my dream. I was like, screw this, man. You know?
Yeah, cool. That's really wild.
Well, when I had many of my, I was going through intense study period, I confronted a lot of astral entities, and you learn to cast a circle. I learned how to cast a circle and throw pentagrams so well that you could do it in your dreams.
Wow.
Yeah, that's one thing in which it's amazing when you go through any type of magical training. That this
none of the staring at your hands routine.
Yeah, right.
I wanted to share something here. I've been doing some labyrinth work over the past couple of weeks, and I've been reading a book called Walking a Sacred Path by Lauren Artress. And in here, she says something that really I think is apt to this discussion that we were having. She says, we mistakenly think that intellect is the avenue to experiencing the sacred, to nourishing the soul. We have discounted the imagination and our other faculties of knowing mystery. So I think we don't want to rely solely on intellect. We need to keep it fluid. I think that's something that's kind of shown in this reading here with the Wheel of Fortune in the water position.
Right.
Well, I think there's another thing about that, generally speaking, is that though in our culture, in our mainstream culture, there has been a drift towards making reason the dominant force in the mind. At this point, we're rediscovering the imagination. I mean, our culture is, and also it's a necessity for soul growth. And actually, it's one of the. I think it's probably one of the reasons why many people are attracted to tarot reading, is because they are discovering their the value of symbol and this other orientation
that's not logical.
Richer.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why it's also the reason the way that Stacy is brought into is through cups, not through wands, not through swords. But through cups, and and again, the way that we're also most of us are attracted to the tarot is through its waking up to us, things that are that seem to be just beyond the reach of our reason or understanding, It awakens our intuition. And imagination is definitely one of the major roads to intuition. Of course, reason is also an effective tool in the imagination, which is what I think we're talking about here. But we can as easily be defeated by those tools as aided by them if we don't watch out. Of course, that would be true with any of the elements.
They're very seductive, I think.
Oh, yeah.
They make you feel like you got a handle on everything.
Well, Jung's alchemy pairs with the King of Wands is intuition of intuition. The Queen of Cups is feeling of feeling. The Knight of Swords is thinking of thinking. The Page of Pentacles is sensation of sensation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have some cross-pollinization where the Queen of Wands is feeling of intuition, but the King of Cups is intuition of feeling. So, and so on with the Page of Swords is sensation of thinking, and the Knight of Pentacles is thinking of sensation. And then you have it again with the Queen of Swords feeling of thinking.
Okay, you're using the Jungian.
Right. But because we're talking in terms of what feeds the materia much more than logic or thinking. The intuition, the feeling, and the sensation aspects outweigh the one of thinking. Do you see what I'm trying to say? In other words, alchemy doesn't give attributions that, he doesn't say logic, thinking, process, processing, so on and so forth, using that kind of language for fire, water, air, and earth. So it's pretty fascinating, to me anyway.
I think we need to remember, too, that what we are after here is a sense of wholeness, not
right.
reason and intellect or imagination, but a healthy blend of both. There really shouldn't be a split. It should be a nice mixture.
Carolyn Mace asks this question. Can you tell me what's reasonable about our culture?
Well.
Or where reason has made you happy or brought joy into your life?
Actually, yes.
Okay.
I can. And this is a personal thing for me. I like understanding the way something works. I also like being mystified by the way something works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a dichotomy. But, I mean, I enjoy the mystery, but I also, those things which do have an explanation, it makes me feel powerful to understand the
explanation. Exactly. It's reason and control issues go together tremendously for all of us.
Let me get back to the reading, the cards here
uh-huh.
as laid out.
Uh-huh.
You have the hidden, which is oppression, and you have the outcome, which is defeat. How can all these wonderfully positive cards, let's put a positive bend to it, wind up with such dichotomous hidden and future aspects? It's because I think let me finish the magus, in order not to make the positive aspect of the defeat, which is your outcome, you have to the arc of influence of the magus, which is the willpower to control the your universe, strength, which is the spiritual overcoming the physical, the very desirous cards. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
It's like the core, the fire in the belly type of thing will
right.
lead to a new, the Ace of Discs, earthly beginning, a new
uh-huh.
A new cycle. So you have to destroy before you create.
Exactly. You have to tear down. The old, you can't make an omelet without breaking eggs.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
a lot of us get trapped, and this is speaking to what we're going to be talking about, Cynthia, later on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of us don't want to break any eggs or don't want to shake up our atmospheres
mm-hmm.
in order to get that ultimate expectation. We all compromise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We make compromises that sometimes mean not certain aspects of ourselves will not be totally fulfilled. Yeah? And then and we all admire the ones who say, hey, I'm going to dive in no matter what. And they get something out of their lives.
I think
they hoopla.
Yeah.
No.
That's funny because the word hoopla was in the
right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I think that's being very hard on human.
I'm only going by the cards. I'm not. You know
right.
what I'm saying. This is what I'm.
Well,
I'm
no, I think
up.
You're interpreting the cards.
I'm interpreting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Interpreting the cards, but it's very true. You can't make an omelet without breaking eggs, and that's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You have to get out of your comfort zone.
Right.
You're going to be uncomfortable, and there are guidelines. There are definite guidelines, and we have to be working with them all the time. It's work, you know. Living a creative life or the life of your dreams does not come easy. It just does not come easy.
There is also something very interesting. I would like to share that Charlie Rose, last week's episode on the brain,
mm-hmm.
on emotions and addiction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what they found out recently in all of their studies. that once, especially if you take an addictive substance, that you actually alter your brain. I mean, physiologically.
Yeah.
Physiologically, your brain does change.
So every time I eat, I physiologically change.
Yes, you do.
It depends upon whether it's fried chicken or a salad, I think.
No, anything. The salad will change the body chemistry and the brain chemistry as well. But the point, another point about the new science with cognition is that it's very easy to get over the addictive substance. That's not where the true addiction lies. The true addiction lies to the situation and the thought processes that made you take the substance to begin with.
And the habits that you form around that.
Exactly.
They had a very interesting observation on Charlie Rose, the experts there, a number of them, and they said, when, remember the billboard signs in which showed you a line of cocaine?
Yeah.
And don't do this to your brain or whatever. Cocaine use increased.
Oh, my God.
Because the brain, what happens is the physical association triggers the need. You have to take the person out of the atmosphere.
The environment. Right.
Because the environment becomes associated with the addiction, and there are visual cues.
You can't hang out with your junkie friends anymore.
No, you cannot hang out with your junkie.
The brain doesn't understand don't. It understands the visual image.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the biggest impact is on the brain. So, reading the words, don't do this to your brain, and having a visual of the cocaine,
mm-hmm.
it's the cocaine that the brain takes in. And that's the positive message. The brain will absorb the positive more than it will the negative.
So you should have a picture of, instead of cocaine, smell the roses and have a big rose with somebody nose up against mm-hmm. it.
But if, for instance, the dealer of the cocaine to you wore rose perfume or worked in a florist, that will be a cue.
Right.
That's true.
Right.
You have to.
As a matter of fact, that's very true, because I'm trying to train my dogs for the oncoming baby.
Mm-hmm.
So once or twice a day I'll walk around with a baby doll wrapped in a bunting.
Right.
And when the baby's born, one of the first things I'm going to do is put the scent of the baby on.
Oh, yeah, you have to. Yeah.
On it. And then have the dogs associate that gentle behavior
mm-hmm.
that they're displaying now with the baby before introducing them to the baby.
Right. You may want to also do a stroller. Walk the dogs with a stroller.
Yeah, I'm picking up a stroller this weekend,
mm-hmm.
as a matter of fact.
Well, you know, I think that the basic thing, at least the way what this spread seems to be alluding to, is that the imagination, this immaterial realm, is very, very deeply etched into our habitual mind, our addictive mind,
mm-hmm.
and. But it's also showing ways to temper it.
Mm-hmm.
For instance,
mm-hmm.
Art being in the earth earth thing there.
In the art.
And also the Ace of Discs.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways that we can find that can anchor us so that we can move on. And of course, we know that one of the things that's coming up, if to the degree that we relate this spread to the what's happening in High Brazil, is that we know that she's under attack,
mm-hmm.
and you know, partly she was under attack by not understanding her own contributions or the collective contributions of Promethea to the immateria, and now she's about to be under attack by the denizens of the temple, of which Benny Solomon is an agent. He's basically been hired by the temple to bump her off because they think she's going to bring in the end of the world.
Yep.
Which is such a terrible thing, no doubt.
End of the, you know, they never say end of the world as we know it.
No, they don't. No.
I mean, I'm listen, Supernatural is going through this whole thing, this show.
Yeah.
So, I'm enjoying our little sessions here, that's for sure. This is very interesting.
Yeah,
very interesting.
I'm happy. I'm happy with things so far, and I was happy to see folks at Reader Studio, and I guess we're about ready to say sayonara into next time. Does anybody got anything they want to say before we can...
I had an impression of that we should try to tackle The Greater Trumps, the novel.
Oh, you mean it's a reading exercise
sometime?
Yeah. Well,
Charles Williams?
I'll go for that.
Yes.
I'll go for that.
Yeah, that's great.
Having written extensively on it, it's in my blog. Look in RS Ning under my blog.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find.
You did that fairly early on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was done last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be an interesting tarot hermeneutics project. If
yes,
you, I'm just putting it out. I heard it. Okay, my schizoid personality actually said, next time, try this.
Yeah. Some off in the future because we got four more novels to go through here.
Well, I have to wait till I get the other batch. We call the Absolute, the next Absolute's coming out in October.
Well, you don't have to wait. You can get
the small ones.
Get the small
novels.
Ones, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we'll be finished going through this before the Absolutes are completed.
Mm, okay. I'll have to get the graphic novels then.
But
you won't be sorry. They're very well done.
Mm-hmm.
So,
pardon me, what are the Absolutes, Paul?
There's going to be three volumes of the Absolute Promethea. The first one is out and includes the first...
Oh, I see, okay.
The first two books, so it goes up to through chapter 12, I think. And then the second one will go probably through some more, and then probably the third one will include some oversized posters and things. Like there's one whole Promethean novel, which is like a